Attractions call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. As a reminder, this call will be recorded. I would now like to turn over the conference to our host, Ms. Emily James, with the NCAA. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you. Welcome to today's press call to discuss the NCAA Division III Committee on Infractions decision regarding Thomas More. As members of the media, you should have received a link to both the press release and the public decision, which contains the details of this case. The information can also be found at ncaa.org. The Committee on Infractions is an independent group comprised of representatives across the NCAA membership and the public. The members who reviewed this case include Amy Hackett, Committee Chair and Director of Athletics at the University of Puget Sound, Ethel Hartberg, Faculty Athletics Representative at the University of Mary Hardin-Baylor, Tracy Hathaway, Associate Athletics Director for Compliance and Student Athlete Welfare at the University of Massachusetts Boston, Gerald Houlihan, Attorney in Private Practice, and Gerald Young, Athletics Director at Carleton College. Amy Hackett will now discuss the findings of the Infractions Committee. Following her opening comments, she will take questions.
Thank you, Emily. The Committee on Infractions decision details the findings and penalties in this case. Our comments today are designed to address your questions. However, the report stands on its own merits. The violations in this case centered on Thomas More College permitting a women's basketball student athlete to live with a former assistant coach and his family cost-free for 8 months, even though the former assistant coach had an existing relationship with the student athlete. NCAA rules do not allow college employees to provide cost-free housing to student athletes. While the student athlete was living with the former assistant coach, three staff members learned of the arrangement and assumed it was permissible without checking to see if it would be allowed under NCAA rules. Because the staff members did not recognize the arrangement as an extra benefit, the student athlete competed an entire season while ineligible. We found that the head coach failed to monitor his former assistant coach when he was unaware of the living arrangement until the former assistant coach brought it to his attention. He approved of the arrangement until the athletic director learned of the situation and decided to end it due to the appearance of student athlete living with a coach. The head coach did not promote an atmosphere for compliance when he did not follow department protocol and seek clarification about living arrangements with the athletic director or compliance officer. Throughout the entire process, individuals at the college misunderstood NCAA rules and believed the arrangement was permissible. The committee found the misunderstanding stemmed from the college's failure to provide adequate rules education. Because of the lack of education, staff members were unable to recognize that the arrangement was impermissible and did not consult with others to make sure rules were followed. Because it did not provide rules education and it did not recognize the impermissible living arrangement, the college did not monitor its women's basketball program. We prescribed the following penalties and corrective measures: public reprimand and censure for the college, 2 years of probation for the college from November 15, 2016 through November 14, 2018. All wins in which the student athlete competed while ineligible must be vacated. Those games have not yet been identified. The college will identify the games impacted after the release of the public report. Several staff members, including the head coach, athletic director, and compliance officer, must attend at least one NCAA rules regional rules seminar. We also accepted the college's self-imposed penalties of a $2,500 fine and an outside audit of the college's athletics program with an emphasis on financial aid policies and procedures. Upon its completion, the school must implement all recommendations made by the reviewer. This concludes my opening remarks.
Thank you, Amy. Eric, can you please explain how reporters can ask a question?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone indicating you've been placed in queue. You may remove yourself from queue at any time by pressing the pound key. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset. handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star one at this time. One moment, please, for the first question. And I have a question from the line of Adam Turner. Please go ahead.
Yes. Does the 2 years of probation include any postseason bans?
It does not.
And we have a question from the line of Tom McKee. Please go ahead.
Are we identifying any specific individuals? Obviously, all the information seems to point to the player that would be named Sidney Moss in this particular situation.
It is the policy not to release the names of the involved parties.
And we have a question from the line of Pat Coleman. Please go ahead.
Hi. My question is, do you folks as a committee feel that you are seeing more violations of this nature? I know there have been, in your public infractions report, you cite now several cases over the course of the last several years.
Each case is unique, and we look at each case on an individual basis. This is somewhat unusual in involving extra benefits, but we have seen other cases involving extra benefits.
And we have a question from the line of Adam Turner. Please go ahead.
Yes, the release says that the student athlete competed the entire season well and eligible, but it also says that the college is going to identify which games. Can you provide some clarification that you can look at?
I'll best refer you to page 14 of the public report, which outlines this particular penalty and the process by which we will take involving the institution and the NCAA to identify those games.
And again, if you have a question, please press star one at this time. We have a question from the line of Pat Coleman. Please go ahead.
So I was going to follow up on my previous question. What do you folks as a committee feel that should be done to better educate schools so that they don't put themselves in this situation?
There's a number of avenues for education. The NCAA rules compliance seminars are the most appropriate way. Certainly education happens at the conference level as well. There's a number of resources within the NCAA. Monthly newsletters that go out that highlight key issues, attending NCAA convention and learning more through that process as well.
And we have a question from the line of Tom McKee. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. My question would be, what is the message, if anything, here from this report to not only the Division III institutions, but also to D1 or D2 institutions?
I don't think the case is intended to provide any message other than we are looking at it from a standard practice of reviewing rules violations. I think the one message is just to ensure that your staff and your employees at every level are educated on rules education and applicable interpretation.
And again, if you have a question, please press star one at this time.
Seeing no other questions, this concludes our comments. Thank you for joining us today. A recording of this teleconference will be available in the near future at ncaa.org.